Florence. There goes the whistle. And I hope that this doesn't continue. This is Sunday morning, April the 23rd, and I have Mr. Mendenhall going to Manila tomorrow, so I'm going to cut you a tape and get it to him so I can at least bring you up to date on what's been going on the 2 weeks since you've left. The machine seems to be whistling and acting up here for some reason or other. I'm trying it across the room from where you and I dictated to Lou to see if it'll stop the echo and the whistle. I seem to have to turn it away from me, but it'll work out all right, I'm pretty sure, because the battery charger up the little red button is snapping away as I talk, and I can tell that the thing is working all right. Well, honey, gee, I'm sorry you haven't heard from me too much. Truth is, I haven't even been around this country for 2 weeks since you left. I just got back last Friday night, and I wrote you a letter from Ben Trey, and I mailed it out there last week, but I don't know whether you get it or not. I've received two letters from you. The last one came in yesterday by Mrs. Knowles, and I got to see her and thank her for bringing it in. The one before came hand carry by somebody coming down here. I forgot who it was. Oh, yeah. No, I don't know either. Yeah, I guess you said it was Navarro. Speaking of Navarro, in that letter you wrote and told me how you had handled Tony's money, he got a message from his folks asking the police and the money, and it was dated the 19th. Your letter was dated the 16th, so I told him that I'm sure they got it, but he's going to send a message back tomorrow with Mendenhall telling them that you gave it to Joe Kinder, and Joe Kinder gave it to his representative, but I'm sure that they've received the money. Anyway, if you have any qualms about it, call up Joe and ask him if that money was ever delivered to that person, with Tony's mother or sister or whoever it was. I surely did enjoy your letters. I've been so muddled up out in the provinces that my domestic life back here is all entirely foreign. It seems like when I come back to Canto, it's like it used to be when I take a trip to Manila. I don't know what's going on, and I don't seem to be oriented here, and the maid sticks around. Since I was going out, I told her to stay in the house at night, and I finally got her convinced that this is the place for her to stay. At least she's watching my property here. But the old gal, she's glad to see me come back, but she's such a nut. I don't know. I think she eats everything I got and drinks all the beer. And but I can't complain, I guess. They don't come any cheaper. And as long as I'm getting a good service. Well, anyway, I come back and the maid's the only one I seem to know, and she's glad to have me, and she goes to trouble and cooks my soup for me on Saturday morning. And then Saturday I was eating soup at noon. I had to go to a briefing. I didn't get morning soup, so I had the soup at noontime, and while we're eating, somebody come and talk to her, and doggone if her brother didn't just die. And so she went into a kind of a frenzy, and I told her to go home. And the other maids was up here, and they said, tell her to go home and don't come back till Monday. And if she is having troubles, and she didn't want to leave me because she afraid I wouldn't get service. And the other maid said, well, we'll cook for him. And so she finally left. And I hope she gets along all right, poor old gal. She tries real hard, and she was really glad to see me. She was dancing and making jokes, and so I guess she'll be back Monday. I'll probably hear all about it if I'm not gone. I was looking over the letter you wrote on the 16th, and talking about your trouble getting out of the airport in Saigon. I guess I don't know what was going on. I think I don't know how they can give them local harassment or what they're after, but there's just some clearances, and the Vietnamese, I think, are real slow in this kind of thing. And you're all headed in the right direction this trip, he says, huh? Well, maybe you were. Who knows? I really agree with you that Helen Kinder's a good old sport. She picking you up at the airport and so forth. I think she really likes you, Florence, and I think she's a real nice person. I've got a lot of admiration and respect for both, for Joe and for her. People live a pretty tough life, and sometimes it's hard to live with them, but I think you'll agree with me that she's come from a pretty good background of Americana, and it isn't easy for her to live out with Joe, just like it isn't easy for you to live out of the country. But you seem to be having a good time over there, going to Subic and all those long trips around. It makes me feel real happy that you're active and that you keep moving around and getting something done, and go down to hear old Lucy White sing and stuff like that. That's what you need, something to keep you real busy. I enjoyed the letters you sent. Elvira and Dad, or Elvira, wrote a nice letter, broke her nose. It's got a I was a little bit concerned. Dad had a dizzy spell, and this is a little bit, you can't have too many of them at 91 or 2 years old. I hope it's not too serious, but I wonder what Elvira will look like with a broken nose now. I hope she's hope she gets over it all right. I kind of agree with you about old Alex's writing. I have a hard time reading it. I don't know what she said, but she's put out some kind of philosophy about Vietnam and what's going on. And sometime I'll have to sit down and read it. But I think, I don't know, oh, she had to answer you because you sent her some gifts. I see. I bet she did appreciate him. I'm very sad to hear about Lou, as he was. I kind of agree with you. He might. I don't know just how long he can hack it. Poor old guy, he suffers a lot. I don't know. I often think of how your dad suffered with that, with the itching he had. And the rest of us go through life without any problems at all. Thank God you and I haven't any physical problems that hold us up. I don't know whether I could stand it or not to be suffering mentally through some physical thing like old Lou. It's just almost too much to think about. Well, Lorraine cut you off a letter. What prompted that? Was that also a gift, or did she? Let me see here. Well, I got this thing in my hand. It's a long time, but I have good intentions. And she said, oh, she's been sick. I see. Phil's trying to get ready for her trip, and she thinks the U.S. politics is rotten, and Vietnam is rotten, and I'm just concerned about Carl and you out there so far away from the rest of us. Well, we'll be home pretty soon, before too long. Good old Ruby, still writing, giving us the dope, and what do you think about that? Elvira going to Oregon. Think they'll make it? I know Dad will if he can. Well, I got had a little bit of mail when I got back here. Besides your two letters, I got a package with my trousers in it, and I bought that bomber suit. And boy, it's something. I can't stand it. I can't stand it on me. I can't. It's on my shoulders. It's big. It's a large one, and it's beautiful, golden color. And I thought. I remember I used to see Lou sitting around in one, and it seemed real cool and comfortable. But this seems kind of hot and drags on my shoulders and. Not loose enough. I put it on and sat around in it for 15 minutes and I had to take it off. It was too hot. So I guess I'll just hang it up and carry it around the country with me. When I go back home sometime, maybe I can slip it on. But I got a letter from the Department of Interior, the Fish and Wildlife Service. So they want to charge me $50 for bringing that turtle into the country, and that's a heck of a thing. I'm real disgusted about it. They send about $50 worth of paper printing telling me the regulations against it, and give me 30 days notice to turn the turtle over to the government. Now what they've done is, see, the regulations read they could fine me up to $5,000 for bringing endangered species into the country, and but they say they'll assess me $50. Then they say, if you'll sign these papers turning the turtle over to the government, we'll call it quits. We'll cancel your fine. It's so obvious that they don't want me to put a claim against the United States for taking my turtle, that these sort of regulations are built up legally to frighten the ordinary guy. And since I'm ordinary, I'm frightened too, to the sense that I guess I'll sign the paper and send it to the establishment. So goes it. Looks like I lose my turtle. But I was thinking as I read this paper over, if I was smart and I had a couple of three young lawyers who wanted to play a game, we'd write back and charge them for taking my property and that this was a gift and from a foreign country that make a lot of waves, and then just to see what they do. But I don't have the lawyers, so I guess what I'll have to do is what they say, what they tell me to do. Then I got a notice from the Agency for International Development in Washington telling me to fill out papers for security check again. Every 5 years you have to fill them out. And this is, I'm up 5 years. It says, in accordance with the Civil Service Commission directives, employees in critical, sensitive positions are required to submit an updated security questionnaire 5 years after appointment and at least once each succeeding 5 years. So I've been here 5 years. How about that? And that means these guys want to give me another recheck. But I've been out of the continental limits 5 years, so I guess I'll have to fill it out and send it all back to them. Anyway, the government's thinking about me, which makes me feel pretty good. Then I got, from the state of Colorado. By the way, this came in a package from 3105 Moorhead, from Al and Pam, and this was mail addressed to Florence from the Department of Revenue, state of Colorado. Guess what? They give you a tax refund of $35.77. Did you know that you made a tax return sometime or other? Well, you did, and you got a tax return. I think this is made out to you, but I think I'll just put it in an envelope and send it back to the bank. Okay? No problem with that. Got lots of information from my broker. I got a letter from another one from the State Department say that I was qualified for duty overseas in any place. It says cleared for full foreign service duty. That's from my physical exam. And just came in. I'm glad to hear that they have accepted me for full foreign service duty. Then I got a bank statement, a lot of checks in there written by Florence, one or two by Carl. I got a credit union statement from the University of Colorado to Florence, and looks like you got $590 in the bank, and you made $1,667 last year, so your new credit is in the amount of $606. Well, I'll send that to you the next time I write a letter. And you and the old credit union in Colorado are pretty good friends. That's about all the mail I got. Oh, I got a statement from the roads agency about the house. Looks like the rent went up to now it's $226. That's $113 a month. They're doing everything by automation, so I guess they're taking care of the old property without any problems. I haven't had much mail this time for some reason or other. I mean, since I came back, it's just starting to flow in. That's two packages I got from Pam, and I did tell you, I wrote you in the other letter that I got a letter from Charlie Cox, and I want to tell you what he said. He says, I finally take my pen in hand, Kirsten still sleeps, and Crusoe, it's 9:30. I have tinkled, washed my face, and a bowl of cereal, and now I wait for the rest of the family to stir. And he talks just a little bit between us, and he says he hasn't had too much luck in closing any deals, but he's about going to close one for $80,000, and you build him a new bar down in the in his den. And he said John Wagner had come over, and Lee had come over and had dinner with him, and he says they're nice folks. And he says, how about relaying my appreciation and gratitude to your lovely wife for the nice book she sent to me? I'll write one of these days and personally thank her whenever Kirsten writes. Florence is really far out, the genuine greatest. We're thoroughly convinced of that. See, there you got a real friend in old Charlie Cox and Kirsten. And all I can add to that kind of commendation is, well spoken, Charlie. I've known that, what you said, for the many, many years. And my dear baby is the best there is. And there's no doubt about that. As I said, this is Sunday morning, and it's about 9:30 now. I thought that I'd get up and have a cup of coffee and shave, and I started to sit down at the typewriter to start a letter, and I thought, heck, I can say so much more if I send this tape. So I sit down and started taping, and it's, as I say, it's 9:30 now, and I'll tape along till about time to go to church. Then I'll run on down to church, and when I get through, I'll come back and finish this tape. When I went away, I never got to finish the one to Lou, and I'll finish that this afternoon. And then I'll send that to him. I better send it, boy, because might be too late the way the letters talk. Trying to figure out this whistle. I'm talking right into the mic now, right facing on to the machine with my mic. I had it turned around a while ago. I don't know what's the best sound, but that whistle is some kind of interference. Or maybe it's my tape heads are dirty. I'll have to investigate that the first chance I get to see why that's making the racket. But it sounds pretty good when I play it back, so I'm going to continue with it as it is. I might tell you about my trips up to Meetah and Kinwa. I finally went over to Kinwa and stayed a few days, but when you left on Tuesday, I thought, well, I don't have a plane to catch till 5 o'clock, so I'll just hang around and go back to town, go back and get my ticket. You say 2 and 1, and I'll have lunch at you say 1, and then I'll go down and take an hour stroll around town. And so I went down to USAID 1, and I was sitting there eating dinner and just about finished, and who should walk up but old Art Britton. And he said, I thought that was you, Carl. He said, you look just like another guy I know from the rear. And he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I just sent Florence home, and I'm going back to Canto tonight on the plane. And he said, well, I've been up here at a meeting, and I'm driving back to Canto this afternoon. And for some reason or other, I don't know what got into me, I said, well, why don't I go along with you and keep you company? And he said, gee, that'd be nice. He said, I'm staying up here in room 304, and he said, I'll be ready to go about 3 o'clock. I've got 2 o'clock, I've got some business to do, and 3 o'clock I'll go back. I said, okay. And so he went on, and I finished dinner, and I was sitting out in the lobby. It was about 12:30, and I began to think, what in the world is the matter with me riding in a scout from here to Canto, facing that afternoon sun in this heat, when I could walk downtown leisurely around for an hour, go out and catch an airplane, and be there in 40 minutes. I just felt sick. And you know, I don't know what in the world got into me, but anyway, finally I sat there and I mulled it over, and I began to rationalize, and I said, well, hell, what does it make any difference if I tell him I'm not going? He's nothing to me. So about 1:30, I picked up the phone and called his room. And I said, Art, I changed my mind. I'm going to catch the airplane, and I ain't going to ride home with you. He laughed and said, okay, I'll see you in Canto. Well, you know, I haven't seen him to this day. I don't know what happened to him. But anyway, I got on the plane that night and came home like I should have in the first place. If I'd have kept my big mouth shut, I wouldn't have got involved in that. And the next morning, bright and early, 7:20, I caught a plane from Etah. So I went up there and stayed for 2 days, on Wednesday and Thursday. And then Friday morning, I went over to Bentray, and I stayed there from Friday until Monday. And I worked with those guys, and Kotzebue's on leave, and Tausch is there. And I got to play tennis 2 or 3 times that weekend with Tausch and some of the other guys, and really enjoyed it. And so then on Monday afternoon, I went back over to Meetah and stayed until Wednesday afternoon. Then I went to Gokong and stayed for 2 days. And while I was over in Meetah the last time, old Chris sent me a wire and said for me to come back, that they didn't, I don't know why he wanted me to come back. And now when I got back, they put out an order, they want us back here every Friday, so we'll attend the Saturday briefing. Well, that just takes a lot of time, but that's the way the business goes. Anyway, up in Bentray, a mortar came in and hit the garage where we used to keep the spare parts outside of my office in Bentray, and hit the top of it and spattered the micro bus, broke the windshield, spattered, put holes all through the pickup, and broke broke a old windows out of about four Scouts, ruined the radiator on the pickup, and then another one hit right on the gate. As you come in the gate where that old man's always fiddling with his pants, it hit the left-hand post there, and there's a bunch of Jeeps parked in there, about eight of them, six of them, I guess, and it just flattened tires and blew up the things. Not, they're small mortars. They don't dig big holes, but they just throw a lot of shrapnel around. And then one of them hit, you know where the gate is, the sentry is? Well, the back of that was S4's office, supply office, in that long building, on the other end of where the PX is, of that building. And one hit right in the roof there, and that guy had just moved out of there the day before and brought all of his stuff down in the back room of my old office where Tun used to be. And they moved S4 into there. And by golly, there wasn't anything in there, but it just hit the roof and exploded and blew some shrapnel holes in the ceiling. They're not too damaging, but they're pesky, and they bother the people. And when they get a report down here that three mortars dropped in, Jesus, they were going to send up a repair crew, and the automotive people want to know what to do. And I told Tom Jefferson, I said, don't send anybody up there till I check out. So I called up Talish, and he said, no damage. We'll take care of ourselves. All we needed was some tin, and I got that. And the automobiles, they needed some glass and stuff, so they sent that up to them with a radiator. So no problem, except old Tun, he seems to be having a hard time. He's been down here for the last couple of days, and I was trying to get a report from Larry Grossman about the inventory, and Tun wasn't around, and I think he's getting ready to get fired or something. He doesn't seem to be too happy about anything. But so goes it in old... left off on the other side, so goes it in old Ben Tray, and so it goes. I've made a big hit over in Meetah with the PSA, and we got his inventory all squared away and sent back here, and they were real happy to get things lined up. These inventories are a big problem this year because many people are leaving, and as the team gets smaller, this gear gets kind of kicked around, and so many people are involved in it. Not when you live there and you know where everything is, you keep your eye on it. But, El Meetah's real happy. These people are happy in Meetah. Now I got a bad problem out in Gokong, and I was supposed to go out there tomorrow, but I got another emergency from SEDEC that they want to put a fence up and they can't do it by themselves and they need some help. So maybe I'll have to go out there. All of this hustling around sounds like I'm a fireman putting out fires. In fact, that's what we refer to the little game as, just putting out fires. You don't have time to organize anything. You just have to jump at the first thing that comes along that looks emergency, and when anything has any length of time to it, you got to attach priorities to each one of these fires, and some of them burn and some of them go out by themselves. About 90% of them would go out by themselves, or the people could put them out if they wanted to. But they desire some help, and that's what my job is. And I enjoy doing it, and if I could just get the bureaucracy off of my shoulders here locally, everything would be all right. But instead of them leaving me operate out in the province, they want me back here to I guess, reassure them. I don't know what else it is. They have money problems, and they're all concerned about expenditures, and I go along with them. I've been concerned about expenditures for 40 years for the government, and there's no reason why I shouldn't be now, except most of my operations have these considerations of economy in them. Everything that I do, I try to do the most economical way. Sometimes it costs more, but to do a certain thing, but it's cheaper in the long run. And so these things you have to sell to people to make them believe that you're on their side. A lot of times out in the field, it becomes to be a kind of a contest between them and us. And them people don't know what's going on with us people outside. But it's an interesting thing, and since you've been so well acquainted with it, you can understand how flipping around here really is is interesting enough for a guy like me. If it wasn't for that interest in life, things would be rather dull, don't you think? I sometimes think that I'm kind of cramming at this age to get all of the activity in that I'm supposed to do or want to do before I become unable to contribute to some world affairs. I rather dread going back to the good old USA and wondering about whether I should go out and clean the snow off my sidewalk, or if the police will come and knock on my door and tell me that the neighborhood requirements are to not burn rubbish in my backyard. These things don't have much interest to me, but gee whiz, when you and I go down to Australia, we won't find that problem, will we? I hope not. Australia's got lots of land. Maybe they can, the air will absorb the smoke from our campfires and from our burnt trash. Does that send you or give you a thrill thinking about going to Australia, baby? Well, it's a few hours later than when I started this little tape. In fact, I've gone to church. Now I'm home. It's almost 12 o'clock. And I'm in a very pensive mood. I'd like to daydream and dream of you and think of you sitting here on my right arm with lolling while we talk to one another and enjoy the love we have for one another. But in my mind's eye, you're sitting here anyway, and I'm talking to you just like this coming to you is the same as if I'm sitting there with you and you're listening. I know that you know how much I love you. I know that you're happy and doing what you're doing and dreaming of perhaps a future, or I don't know what you look forward to. It seems to be that it's always been my ideas of looking forward to, and you were just as happy to go along without making any great plans for your own individual self. But apparently what I look forward to is what your life is dedicated to, because you've indicated to me over 33 years that this is what you want and you're happy with it. And you know that it floods my heart just thinking about the dedication that you've shown, given to this old boy over the years. I wish there was something that I could do beyond my own physical strength. Maybe there is. I've got something in mind. Maybe someday I'll surprise you with the greatest thing that you've ever known in your life. We'll see. I told you that I thanked Mrs. Knowles for bringing the letter over, and I asked her what she thought of moving over here, and she said, well, something to the effect that she had second thoughts sometimes. She'd probably better off where she was. And I said, well, I had those thoughts myself about Florence, and I just enjoyed going to the Philippines, and so we decided that it'd be better for Florence to stay where she was. But I really got a feeling that she's not too impressed by coming over here. If she gets a job, maybe she'll be satisfied to go ahead and swing. But if she just has to sit around and be socializing with Wendell's people, then I'm afraid it'll be a long, long, slow haul for her. But she's kind of an active gal. I said, after I thanked her for bringing the letter and asked her a few questions about her stay here, I said, you know, if there's anything I can do at all to contribute to your welfare here, you be sure to call me. She said, well, thanks a lot, Mr. Williams. I sure appreciate that. And old Wendy was standing there grinning. He never did think too much of me, I guess, but he and I had... He gave me a ride someplace the other day in his car, and we talked a little bit about Gokong, where he was, and maybe he's forgotten or forgiven me for not jumping on his bandwagon when he wanted to go out there and inventory that place with four or five guys, and had me included. But I included myself out through circumstances that was actually beyond my control. I'd have gone with him. I wasn't trying to dodge anything, but I certainly was tied up in another province that I had, so. But he's been real friendly to me the last few days. He's got a very bad hip, some kind, like my hip gets acting up, or like maybe it's like Phyllis's hip. He can hardly move around sometimes, and this guy, Rudy Kaiser, I didn't know until the other day, took a course in physiotherapy at John Hopkins University after he got out of the service, and he's pretty good at cracking your back. Well, when I was out there last time, after I found out about it, I was telling him all about my neck, and kind of hoping he'd hint that, or hinting around, hoping that he would lay me down and jump on me and snap that back into place. In fact, he offered to, but when we went to bed that night, he didn't ever get around to it. By the way, over there in these places, we've moved around considerable, and in Meetaw and Gokong, and over in Meetaw, they used to have a big military hotel there where all the military lived. We've moved out of that, and all the troops have gone out to live at the CB camp we had, where the CBs left. And over in Gokong, that office that you and I went to when we went to visit with Mary, Fred's wife, why, we've turned that back to the Vietnamese, and we've now moved up in an office at a place called the Spanish House. I don't know whether you've got to see the Spanish House area or not, but all the people now live in the prefabs, those in that compound where the prefabs are, and they're really drawn down. There's only three military guys over in Gokong now, and about four civilians. And Mitau still has a pretty good sized team because they still got districts that they have to supply, and so they need S4 out there, and their military isn't drawn down quite so far. But old Rudy Kaiser was hot for my body there. When I went out last time, he was teed off because we hadn't done something that it was supposed to be done. And these fellas are rather touchy about us FSOs because they think that we're working for them guys and we're not part of us guys. And it takes me a little bit of talking to get them back on my side. But I've got Kaiser and Doc Evans all squared away now. They're my real buddies. And if I got Doc off of this this inventory hook, if I can get Rudy off, he's in the hole about $2,000, $2,500 to be exact, and I must work real hard to get him off because he has to. I've already written a letter for him, and all he has to do is edit it and go over it and send it in tomorrow. I hope we get it because this means we can. This means that the GSO here in Canto can solve their problems and get up to Saigon the 25th, I think, is what the deadline date is. But let's see, I wandered away off there talking about Knowles when I was talking about Mrs. Knowles. I don't know whether you're interested in those things or not that I talk about on the job. I know that since you know where they all are, it's easy for me to talk to you about them and if you like to know what I'm doing. I don't have too much activity back here, although this weekend seems to have been pretty active. That well, the maid had to go because of her brother, as I told you, and then yesterday afternoon I was going to play tennis with a big fella named Carl Newland, and he said we'd play about four. Well, I had made an appointment with a Filipino radio expert to come over and look at my TV. And while I was gone, he came and I wasn't here and he wouldn't work on it. So he wrote a note and said he'd be back Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. So when Carl came, it was real hot. And he said, maybe it's too hot to play tennis. I said, okay, let's not play. Sit down here a minute. And this Filipino came right then. Well, he stayed here till 7:30. Good night, about 3 hours working on this thing. First, he got out the instructions and studied it. And then finally, about all he did was change the antenna wire. And we got a new big piece of wire and he spliced it into the antenna and hooked it on the TV. Now I have a TV antenna on both the TV and on the amplifier. We got a new station here in Canto. They did away with the UHF that we had so much problem with, and now they have a direct station, channel 13, I think it is. And this channel 13 is a, I think it's a tape. I don't know whether it's a rebroadcast direct, but it comes in real plain. But the sound is all fouled up, and if you get the sound plain, you can't get the picture clear. So it's still a little bit jazzed up, but he's supposed to be coming back this afternoon again at between 2 and 4. And if he does, maybe he can straighten it up. He thinks that if he directs the antenna right to the Bintui airfield, why, we might pick up channel 13 a lot better with both sound. So at least by the time you get back here again, maybe I'll have some television and you can have a little bit of entertainment while you're around. I hope so. Let's see what else. One other item. I come back, I see the front end of the air conditioner in the bedroom had fallen off, and it was laying there. The maid had picked it up, and she said something about it. You remember me taking that down and trying to screw it in there so it held? Well, it fell off. It's a wonder it didn't break all my pictures I had on there on the dresser, but I've got to stick it up. And the old ice box ain't heat cooling off any better than it was. So let's see, there I go, way off where I started back with Mrs. Knowles. Now, I think you'll probably hear from her through the other people that's her friends, and I think that like you heard from that other woman in Da Nang or someplace, that old Vietnam ain't quite what it's cracked up to be to live in. And I'm sort of under that impression right now, because there's not too many American women here to associate with, and there's not a great variety of things to do as you have there in Manila. And since this is our last cruise, and we're just in it now for to complete our time, I think we'll be real happy to stay as we are. I don't know. I guess I better get a look here in May to see when I'm coming back. This is April. You talked about the 17th. How about me coming over on the 19th and coming back on the 29th, Memorial Day? That'll be a good one. I'll get to stay 19, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days. And only one, I'll have the only count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days against my leave. About 10 days out of country. Okay, how about that? I'll make a chit out this afternoon to come over on May the 19th and on a Friday, and come back on a Monday the 29th. All right? I think it's either the 19th, that they go in on a Friday and come back on a Monday or something like that, or 18th, whatever it is, 18 or 19, I'll make out a chit planning to come in. So, you send me back a tape, and I think I'll just send you tapes from now on, because I've got these few to go and a few to use, and we can talk back and forth for a while. I'd like to make a tape for Dad. I guess I better send him something if he's being concerned about my welfare out here. But I'll try and get a note off to him. You, and by the way, if you write to any of those folks, say that Carly's down in the Delta and he's doing his regular work, and that he stays in the air a lot. He don't get down too much on the ground, so there's really nothing to worry about. Nothing more than they've had to worry about for the past 5 years. I think that ought to hold them. There's only two of us field support officers down here now that's actively engaged. One fella went on leave. The other fella filled in for a absentee. And so there's just Carl Newland and myself. And now I guess at a meeting yesterday they said, who's going to cover these other provinces? And they said, well, we'll just have to make some assignments. So I guess maybe I'll have to be flying out to some of the other provinces before too long, places that I've never been. This is very disheartening to me because I waste a lot of time in the air. However, we'll do what they say, and we'll do it the best we can. That's the only thing I know. On top of these duties, on top of my duties outside, I just got a notice that I have the officer of the deck for 30 April. That's a week from today. I go on duty, or hours are 1700 to 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's your responsibility to check with the duty deputy chief of staff prior to going on duty and so forth. So I'll be down there in the main desk next Sunday afternoon, sitting there all night, looking around and trying to act intelligent. Maybe I'll save the war. Maybe I'll save the day. Who knows? These duties are supposed to become some kind of a extra duty stuff you draw extra money for. If they're going to pay me $50 a day for a duty, they'll have to pay me a time and a half for overtime, which will make me draw $75 instead of a day's duty. Now, I could be the duty officer every day for that $75. But, of course, Uncle Sam can't save any money by paying me $75 to take the duty every day, can he? When you write to old Aggie, you tell her that old Carly sends his love. She hasn't been writing to you, or you haven't sent any letters since you come back. So everything must be going all right down in her part of the world. The news from Lafayette is always interesting, and I always read the Lafayette Leader as it comes out when you send it with interest, although I don't know too many people anymore. But all of our folks back there are constantly on my mind when I think about those things, or them. And when you write, you tell them that we're coming home next year, perhaps, and we send our love to Ethel and Doc Gordon and all of those people. So, I don't know, honey. I'm so contented and happy. Things are going so good. I haven't a complaint in the world. My health is fine. I haven't lost the weight that you've been talking about you and Mary are going to lose. But darn it, I'm in a good mental attitude, and I get a little teed off occasionally. I think I took a kind of shaft in here on this local situation in Canto, but that's all right. I'm doing very good outside, and I think the good Lord
looks after me, so kind of helps me make my decisions. It takes a lot of responsibilities and weights off of my mind that I don't know whether I'm capable of handling or not. I just can't be sweating up storms someplace about the way things are when they don't shape up. That's why I've always enjoyed it out here so much, is that things seem to go along positively and without me getting involved in a lot of mental hassle. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know. I'll tell in the long run. But I feel good, and my heart's full of love. My head's just empty, contentment. I went down to commissary yesterday and refurnished my larder for $30 worth. And, you know, I looked at my checkbook, and we've only been members a month of that commissary, and I think I spent $140 with my initiation fees and commissary goods, $140 in 1 month. But $65 of that was for fees and entrance fees, and I'll get 40 of that back or so. So I've been using the old commissary, and it's a pretty good thing. But I think that's what keeps me pretty well fattened up. I drink a couple of beers at night. And that's about the size of it. I begin to kind of like that beer for thirst quenching, but I don't have any great hankering for drinks like I did. In fact, I don't have any. I can, if I get up out of bed, say, and I'm thirsty and drink a Pepsi, that seems to satisfy my needs. So the beer drinking is pretty well under control, and you saying you're going to have to knock off booze because of your diet, well, I don't think the ounce or 2 ounces that you drink has not too much effect on your weight. It might be more beneficial to you for a little relaxing than anything else. I think whiskey's good for the blood. And just like I'm good for your blood when I get you stirred up. I've not stirred up. I feel real good. And I take my vitamin pills. I got some vitamins that I ordered. And they're nothing but fish oil. Cod liver oil is what it looks like, but it says it's vitamin A and vitamin D. So now I've got A and C and D and vitamins, and I got these everyday vitamins, you know, one a days. So I guess I'm vitamized up pretty well. At least I'm happy about things. And honey, I'm sure happy that you're my baby. I love you so much. You're my whole guiding, controlling. You're like a rocket out of space, and you're in the home port, guiding and directing me. I can go and feel free and look ahead to the landing on the moon. But I know that controlled by my love for you and you're guiding me in the right path, and I've been so happy about it ever since I've been with you. I hear people and their sorrows, and you and I have nothing but happiness. So don't forget that I love you with all my heart. I owe you my very existence, and I'll be anxious to get to see you on the 19th to 20th of May, and about a month from now. And you just keep everything in your mind of what I've just said, and you'll be happy too. And when we go home, we'll be more happy. I think we'll probably have to buy a home, and I'll probably have to get some retirement, but we got a great future ahead of us. The good Lord's taking care of us all the time. So you be careful. Write me a tape, or write me a note, anybody that's coming. And remember that the good Lord's watching over both of us, and I love you with all my heart. Goodbye, baby. Take it easy.